Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Octopulse, our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. I'm Mark Faulkner, Detroit News Assistant Sports Editor, joined by Ted Colfin, our Red Wings beat reporter. Coming up on the podcast, we'll hear from Alpina's Cooper Black. He's a 6'8" goalie who played 2 years at Dartmouth College, and he just signed a $1.9 million two-year contract with the Florida Panthers. But first, Ted, this is our first podcast since the season ended last Tuesday. Last Tuesday, you were in Montreal. The Wings were coming off that dramatic victory on Monday here in Detroit. Lucas Raymond with a tying goal and then the winning goal in overtime against the Canadiens. And then that final game at the Bell Center, David Perron scored the tying goal with 3 seconds left. But Detroit missed the playoffs when the Flyers had to pull their goalie, losing on an empty net goal, putting the Capitals in, the Wings out. So what was that like in the final regular season game of the season for the Wings? And I know it's hard to believe, Ted, but the Wings came this close to hosting game 3 here on Thursday night against the Rangers in the middle of this NFL draft. Talk about a roller coaster ride, eh?
Hey, Mark, I thought those last 2 weeks were amazing, exhilarating. Mm-hmm. Thought it was a lot of fun. I think Wing fans, you know, got re-energized with all the playoff talk and whatnot. Oh, my friend, when Perron scored, I mean, let's face it. I mean, my goodness, that was unbelievable. And you kind of wondered where this team could be headed. And then you're right, the roller coaster ride, Washington scores right after. It was an amazing evening. Good on the Red Wings, I thought. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do believe it. 91 points. They had the same number of points as Washington, lose out on a tiebreaker. I don't know about you, my friend, but I thought it was a successful season for them. What do you think?
Ted, I agree. There was a lot of success. And could you imagine if the Rangers were coming in here into game 3 on Thursday? They played the Rangers well this year. The Kreider scored a power play goal in the third period. And if you go back to last year, too, the Wings beat the Rangers 4-1 at their high water mark. They were 7 games over .500. The Rangers came in here with their best road unbeaten streak in almost 60 years. The Wings won that game. They played them well. And when you look at the Red Wings defense, too, when you take a look at Sider, Sherratt, Petrie and Edvinson, it reminded me a lot of that Montreal defense that went to the Stanley Cup Finals, Shea Weber, Petrie, Sherratt, and Joel Edmondson. You had those four defensemen playing well, Gostisbehere and Mata there as well. A hot goaltender, a power play. You never know what could happen against a President's Trophy team.
No, I agree with you. I think I'm not sure they would have beaten them, but mm-hmm. I think it could have been, you know, 6, dare we say 7 game series. I mean, mm-hmm. You just never, like you said, you never know. And they would have come in as probably one of the hottest, if not the hottest team heading into the play. Well, Winnipeg had won 8 in a row. So they'll be, I mean, they're a hot team going into this thing. But I don't think they would have been bereft of chances. I think they would have had a good chance of maybe upsetting the Rangers. But anyways, good season. A lot of positives. Some negatives, let's face it. Defensively, this team didn't improve much at all, if at all. I still think the goaltending's in a weird situation. I think it wasn't, I mean, let's say Alex Lyon established himself as an NHL goalie, but boy, last few weeks of the season, it seemed like the workload finally affected him, and you don't know Villahuso's health going into next year. So the goaltending is a little bit of a question. You have to sort out some of these unrestricted free agents, no question. I mean, some of these players really helped them this year, but can they afford to keep them all, or can they keep them all? It's going to be difficult to do. So questions heading into the offseason, but mm-hmm. I think this past season, Mark, I thought it was, they took the next step forward, I think. I really do.
Ted, at the end of the season, you asked Steve Yzerman about that final game in Montreal. He said it was so exciting. 1 minute they were in the playoffs, and then they weren't. He also talked about the team's defense, which, like you said, ranked among the worst teams, 24th out of 32 teams. Probably the biggest reason, he said, that they're on the outside looking in during the playoffs.
It's not just goaltending and D, it's the forwards. It's collectively our entire team. We have to improve in that area, and you know it's incumbent upon our coaching staff to instill or improve, continue to work on being more, whether it's a different system or getting better in the way we play and improving our players in the system. It's practice for me and get it over and done with. And again, goals against is a challenge around the league. It's more of an offensive league. You're seeing it in the scoring totals of the top players in the league. Goals against averages for goaltenders is down. It's a difficult league to defend in right now. It's become, for whatever reason, a more offensive league and exciting, but you still, the best teams in the league probably are somewhere near, the majority of them are near the top in goals against and defensive play, though, whether it's the traditional stats or the underlying numbers. So collectively, as a team, we have to get better. That's the number one thing. But there will be some change in our roster. I can't tell you that it's one player or four players or whatever. But whoever's here, we have to improve. I think we took steps this year, and at times we're good. And as we all saw at times, it was, we had some tough stretches. And when you're not scoring for whatever reason, you got to rely on keeping it out of your net. And I can't solely put it on the goaltenders.
So, Ted, starting with those goalies that Yzerman just mentioned, let's see how you rated each of the players and your final grades in today's paper and online at DetroitNews.com. In goal, Alex Lyon got the best mark, a B, followed by Ville Husso with a C, James Reimer a C+ on defense. Marit Seider was number one with an A-, then Ben Sherratt, Shane Gostisbehere with Bs, Motta with a B-, Petrie and Walling got Cs, Hall a failing grade, a D, and Edvinson incomplete. At center, Dylan Larkin tied for the best grade on the team. The captain got an A, same as Lucas Raymond. Larkin was followed at center by JT Compher with a B, Andrew Kopp a B-, totally agree there, by the way, with Kopp, who got lower marks on most report cards. Joe Valeno sometimes at center got a C, Austin Zarnik a C+, and on the wing, Raymond got that A, followed by Kane with an A-. Kopp's line mates, Rasmussen and Fisher, you gave them Bs. Alex DeBrincat and Perron were next with B-. Fabry a C+, Sprong a C, Jonathan Berggren incomplete. And as for Derek Lalonde and his coaching staff and Steve Yzerman and his management team, you gave everyone a B+.
I got the needle from quite a few fans regarding the coaching staff. Well, I mean, okay, no question the team defense wasn't, you know, up to par, but they essentially made the playoffs. I mean, 91 points, this was a playoff team, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought they, again, probably did as much as they could out of this roster. I mean, 91 points, that's a pretty good season, so I give them credit. I thought they wrung as much as they could out of this roster. Mm-hmm. The defense... obviously, that needs to still, if they're going to take the next step now to make the playoffs, defensively, I think they, obviously they need to be better.
Where do you think the team improved the most then, Ted? And without knowing Steve Yzerman's offseason moves, can you see the core players taking that next step, scoring about the same amount of goals or a little less, but maybe tightening up defensively and allowing fewer goals?
Well, Mark, it's going to be on the coach. It's going to be up on the coaching staff make that step. They have to improve. I mean, if you listen to Yzerman, I think that's definitely going to be something that they're going to be responsible for. Lalonde and his staff is going to be responsible for. They're going to have to improve defensively. And I think it is going to be pretty much the same roster. I don't think you can do a heck of a whole lot. So it is going to be up to these players to improve and take the next step. I think, obviously, you look at a guy like Lucas Raymond, you wonder where he can go next season. Boy, was he good that final month of the year. I've never seen him play better hockey. Can Dylan Larkin take another step? Or does he plateau at this level, which is, you know, more than fine? I mean, he was basically a point-of-game player. I don't know. It'll be interesting, those guys like the JT Confers of the world, Andrew Kopp, Perron, if he comes back. Well, Mr. DeBrincat, Alex DeBrincat, there's another level there for him. I think this was somewhat of a mildly disappointing season. I think they expected more than 30 goals, 35 goals, but we'll see. I mean, there's room for improvement from certain people. It'll be interesting to see what Steve Yzerman has up his sleeve. What do you do with Patrick Kane? That's going to be an interesting angle. He definitely added something to this roster, this lineup. he was basically a point per game player. If you lose him, then somebody has to make that up. So yeah, there's some intriguing questions ahead for this team.
Coming up on the podcast, we'll hear from Derek Lalonde and that 7-game losing streak, which all but eliminated the Red Wings. And we'll also look at your playoff predictions. But first, today's interview, our special guest is Cooper Black. Joining us now is Alpena native Cooper Black, a 6'8", 240-pound goaltender who played the last 2 years with Dartmouth College, undrafted in the NHL, but just signed last month as a free agent, a $1.9 million two-year entry-level contract with a Stanley Cup finalist, Florida Panthers. Cooper, welcome to the podcast. I talked to your college coach, Reed Cashman, who called you a late bloomer. You said late bloomer. That's an understatement. For our podcast listeners, though, Cooper, just so they know, you were playing high school hockey in Alpena 5 years ago. And then you played in the North American Hockey League with Maryland and Odessa, committed to Dartmouth and cut by Omaha in the United States Hockey League. Then you went out to Nanaimo in the British Columbia Hockey League. So what has this journey been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a long road. I think, like you said, it was late bloomer for sure. I think it's kind of, looking back on it, it's always kind of funny to think about how different your life could have been. Like, you know, you said that I played high school hockey in Michigan. So, like, I was literally admitted to go to Michigan State and become a marine biologist or a vet or something, like a lawyer or something along those lines, just going to school at MSU and wasn't even gonna continue to play hockey. Was maybe thinking about playing like ACHA D3. Which is about as low level college hockey as it gets. So, but yeah, so it's kind of funny looking back on it. And like you said, it's been a long journey. I've had a lot of stops along the waves, but I had a lot of good billet families and coaching staffs that have helped me grow as a person and as a player along the way. And I think that's honestly what's really helped me and given me success.
Cooper, I also talked to your dad, Ed Black, a former prosecuting attorney and now a 26th Circuit Court judge in Alpena. He remembers when you were about 7 years old, kind of quitting the game because you didn't like wearing the equipment. Then you got asked, he said, to play goalie at a tournament in Bay City. He also said after your junior year at Alpena High School, he didn't know if your hockey career was going to end the following season, just like you said, if you were going to pursue maybe a career in law like your father. So how about your family's influence? Your mom, Megan, is a principal, and your younger brother, Andrew, and younger sister, Emily, are both going to college now. What has it been like moving away from home? You mentioned the billet families, and even now your dad said the whole family really, Cooper, they don't really understand what's ahead of you, that it's been a bit of a whirlwind couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really come from a hockey family, so I think everybody's, you know, trying to figure it out as we go. My dad was a pretty good football player growing up and did that, and then my mom wasn't really into sports. So I definitely got the athletic side from my dad, so I got him to thank for that. But he's definitely been the one that's kind of helped me along the way and pushed me and helped me improve. But you mentioned I was actually six or seven and quit because I didn't like how the gear felt. So that's just like another instance where it's kind of like funny to think about, you know, I almost didn't even play hockey. So yeah, kind of just got lucky with that and then fell in love with the position then. But I mean, like you said, it definitely has been interesting with my siblings. Like my sister's 3 years younger than I am, and we were the same grade in college. So like I remember in high school, she was a freshman and I was a senior. And now technically, like we're both sophomores, or I was a sophomore. And so now she's going to be graduating before I am. And it's just kind of funny. You know, I'm 3 years older. So it's definitely been a journey, but they've all been there to support me. So they've been there and been rooting for me the whole time. And I can't thank them enough.
And Cooper, how about your height? You're 6'8" now. In your family, your dad said he's 6'2". Your mom's dad, he said, is about the same height, 6'2". Your brother, Andrew, is about 6'6". Your dad said you grew in your junior year of high school from about 6 foot to 6'5". And he says you just never stopped growing. So what's it been like on and off the ice? On the ice, your Dartmouth coach, Reed Cashman, says he still doesn't think that you really understand that you're still growing into your body and learning what you can and can't do. So are you tired of talking about your height?
No, I wouldn't say I'm tired of talking about it. I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, maybe when you're walking into a grocery store and then someone looks over at you and goes like, "Wow, that's a tall guy," and you're like, "Yep, yeah, I've heard that one before." And then a lot of people like to ask the basketball question, so that one can get old. But I never really mind
Good.
when it comes to this type of stuff. It's a lot different. But no, it like Cash said, right? Like I haven't always been this tall, right? So my dad was right. Like I think it was my junior or senior year of high school, like
Okay.
that summer that I grew and I shot up a couple of inches, and then even in juniors I kind of grew a few more inches, got up to 6'8", 6'9". And then like Cash said, like the last 2 years of college I've really been just trying to like hone it in and figure out how to use my size. And I think for me, like part of why I wanted to make the jump is I felt ready, and I felt like the next level was really going to help me develop and continue to help me learn how to use my size to my advantage, because it is an advantage, but it can also be a disadvantage if not used correctly. So I think that once you figure it out and you perfect it, I think it's definitely going to be a huge benefit for me.
And you know, Cooper, on that topic, Reid Cashman said, you're learning to calm down in the net, that at your size, he said, when you have the right angle, the right depth, there's literally no net to shoot at. He also said that this may sound counterintuitive, but when you're making really athletic saves, he says, sometimes you're out of position. He said, sometimes in scrambles, of course, you've got to rely on your athleticism, but really, most times he says you're just trying to be square to the shooter. Some basic fundamentals, crispy set in your movements, reading the play, anticipating plays, things you'll get better at as you move up in your hockey career. It sounds straightforward, but when things are hectic, Cooper, and happening all around you, like last night with Charlie Lindgren, he made 42 saves at Little Caesars Arena. What's it like when everyone is just trying to get you off your game?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You kind of talk about being calmer in the net, right? Like, I think what a lot of people who don't really understand goaltending think is that all the flashy saves are the guys who are top guys and stuff like that. Like, you see all the cool saves and highlights and stuff like that. But any of those guys that make those saves would probably tell you that they were out of position. I mean, obviously, there's gonna be circumstances where you're gonna just have to make an athletic save based off, bounces and stuff like that. It happens,
Absolutely.
and that's why you gotta have that athleticism piece. But I think if one of the big differences that you can notice just from goalies who are good versus bad is just like how calm they are in the net and how minimal their movement is, right? Like, so in a hectic situation, you want to be in position and being calm, because when you start swimming around, it opens up holes, and guys are good enough now that it's just like they can find them and kind of pitchfork them through. So I think when it comes to that, that's kind of a important piece that everybody learns with, and like I'm still learning that, right? So it's about simplifying your game and making you move as little as possible. Well, you have guys like you said who are trying to, that's what all the NHL guys do, right? Like all the guys who are at the higher levels are all trying to get you off that. And like you said, Lindgren made 42 saves. I watched some of that game yesterday, and you go watch it, and I mean, first period, pretty much every single save, he's just there, set square, and that's what makes a good goalie.
Cooper, Coach Cashman also mentioned Jason Tappalot, an associate coach who works with the goalies at Dartmouth. He's a former goalie himself. I looked it up. He spent 4 years at Boston University. He coached at Union College, where, by the way, he coached Red Wings defenseman Shane Gostisbehere, who last night, Gostisbehere led all Detroit defensemen in ice time at 21:44. He was plus one with one shot. So what's Jason Tapp like, and how has he helped your game?
Yeah, I mean, Tapper's an unbelievable coach, and so is Cash. I think the whole staff, that was one of the biggest reasons that I wanted to go to Dartmouth in the first place, is the staff there are unbelievable, and I think they're easily up there for best college coaching staff there is. Like there's no one better. So but when it comes to Tapper, yeah, no, he was unbelievable coach, and I think that the 2 years that I was there, he really helped me with my game and continue to improve upon, like you said, like the athleticism that you have, but then you got to rein it in. So I think that was one of the biggest things that Tapper helped me with when I was there, along with a whole slew of other things. We do video and stuff like that, and make adjustments, and do skates before we'd play teams and do some pre-scouts. And so maybe the drills that we did that week were a little bit more targeted towards the teams. But no, Tapper is definitely a huge piece in where I like my development, and I definitely have him to thank for helping me get to this point in my career.
Cooper, thanks for your time so far. Just a couple of more questions. So why the Florida Panthers? Every team has a lot of good prospects, and the Panthers are among the deepest teams in goal. Of course, they have 6'2", Sergei Bobrovsky, who led them to the Stanley Cup final, 6'6", Anthony Stolar shut out Ottawa last night. They also have 6'3", Spencer Knight, a guest in our Detroit News studio, 6'5", Magnus Helberg. He played here in Detroit last year. There's 6'3", Evan Cormier, who played in Saginaw at the University of Guelph, and he's now in the ECHL with the Florida Everblades. And there's 6'5", Mac Guzda, the number one goalie with the AHL Charlotte Checkers, a team, by the way, that Alex Lyon led to a Calder Cup. So your contract officially doesn't kick in until next year, Cooper, but how are you approaching these next couple of years in the Florida system?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, you mentioned all those guys' names, but I think you go, to be honest with you, I think you go look at any NHL team and they're going to have guys under contract, you know? I think that's one of the hardest things is you look at teams and you can be like, okay, well, you know, maybe they don't have a full system right now, but, you know, free agency hits and you go sign whoever you want, you know? Sure. Like, I think a lot of those guys, their contracts are up within the next couple of years. And I think the biggest thing for me, honestly, was feeling like how important the staff wanted me to be here and how much they, I guess, were wanting to help me improve. So you want to go to a place that first of all wants you, but you also want to go to a place that you feel like has a good staff that can help improve you. So I think you look at the their staff here. We got both the Luongos and I think that when you look at their whole goaltending department, it's really hard to look at that and be like, you know, there's better places. So you don't know what guys are going to be doing in the off season and stuff like that. So no matter what, wherever you go, doesn't matter who you sign with, what team,
exactly,
you're going to have to go in there and you're going to have to earn your opportunity. No, nobody's just going to give you it. You're going in there to steal people's jobs and they're there to prevent you from doing it. So, I mean, it's a business and you just got to go in there prepared to work and steal jobs.
Finally, Cooper, no 6'8" goalie has ever played in the NHL. I talked to Craig Lachlan about this last podcast. He's the Capitals color analyst, and he remembers scoring his first NHL goal with Montreal on Pat Reagan, who is 5'8". Ken Dryden, by the way, you're up for the Ken Dryden Goalie Award in the ECAC. Dryden was 6'4", but just 205 pounds. For the record, there have been 3 6'7" goalies, including Ivan Fedotov, who made his Flyers debut last month. The other 6'7" goalies are Ben Bishop, Mikko Koskinen, and Mads Sogard. Sebastian Kosa, by the way, the Wings' first-round pick in 2021, he's 6'6". So there will be other 6'8 goalies just like you, Cooper. They're going to try and break the barrier. But what are your thoughts about improving your game, as Reid Cashman has mentioned, year by year, getting better, and then focusing on that NHL goal?
Yeah, I think you got to stay present and intentional. I think that you gotta stay in the moment and you can't look too far ahead, right? I think if you take care of your job and you do what you're supposed to do, then eventually you'll get the opportunity. I think if you start looking too far down the road and look at, well, I got to beat this guy, and this guy, I think that definitely puts a little bit more pressure on you. But I think if you just show up to the rink every day and you put the work in, you're gonna improve just based off that. And I think when you get your opportunity, you just got to take it and run with it. You know, that's kind of how these things work, and that's what I look forward to doing.
Cooper, thanks again for coming on the podcast today, talking about your early years in Alpena, from high school to the NAHL, to the USHL, to the BACHL, to Dartmouth and the ECAC, and now joining the NHL Panthers. Best of luck in the summer and preparing for next year. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Cooper Black. Now let's hear from Red Wings coach Derek Lalonde. On February 28th, the Wings were 13 games over 500, the best record in Steve Yzerman's 5 years. 13 games over 500, they were on a 6-game winning streak. They outscored the opposition 28-10. They were fifth in the league in goals back then, behind the Avs, Stars, Leafs, and Canucks. And they were 17th in goals against, better than 24th, where they wound up. They beat the Avs 2-1 in overtime. They shut out the Flames 5-0. They blew out the Blues 6-1. The Caps 8-3. They beat the Blackhawks 3-2 in overtime on that Kane goal and his return to Chicago. There was a loss on February 29th, the next game coming home against the Islanders. Ali Mata scored twice there to tie the game. And then Matt Barzal scored the winner, banking a shot in behind the end line. A real close game. And then the one game which arguably cost them the playoffs, well before they went 8-15 down the stretch. And if we go back to, Ted, to Saturday, March the 2nd, trailing the Panthers 4-0, Dylan Larkin suffered a lower body injury in a scuffle with Florida defenseman Brandon Montour. Larkin missed the next five games. They were outscored 27-9. They were never really in those games without Larkin. They lost twice to the Coyotes, 4-0 and 4-1. They got blown out by the Avs, 7-2, 7-3 against the Sabres. A closer game against Vegas, but they were still down 2-0 in the first 15 minutes. So here's Lalonde now on that 7-game losing streak, five of those games without Larkin.
Obviously, not having Dylan was a big part of it. You don't have to be the most expert hockey mind to see. I mean, I saw a stat. We're 100, just over 100-point team with Dylan in our lineup. You know, we're picking first overall with him out of our lineup, if you're going to project wins and losses. So it's just probably where we're at. Our depth, our center depth, it was a tough player to lose. He's playing 22 minutes. Now he's playing 22 minutes. He's driving us for 22 minutes. But again, it's still one player. It's a team sport. Could have a little more of probably some areas. So, of course, that'll be reflection. I think we were 4-10 without him. I consider 4-11. One of his injuries happened early, in which we ended up being tied 1-1 right after his injury. So that was a tough one. Hopefully, with some added depth and some other guys driving us, we can absorb an injury like that going forward.
Coach Derek Lalonde there saying, with added depth and other guys driving them, maybe they can absorb an injury like the one to Larkin. But Ted, I think they'll learn lessons in games like that one against the Panthers, one of the toughest, most physical teams in the league. I know they don't match up well against teams like Dallas with Roope Hintz and Marchment. The Panthers in that game, Ted, I remember you asking me in the press box, is this the chippiest game of the season? Florida had 40 hits. They outhit the Wings 40-25. And I remember on the first shift of the game watching Erik Ekblad on a simple shoot-in from center on a line change. He came all the way from his own blue line to center. He took a run at one of the wings, setting the tone. In fact, Matthew Tkachuk that week said, they start these games, the first 3 minutes, he said, they don't even touch the puck. It's all check, check, check. So in that game, the Panthers also took two penalties against Larkin. Sam Bennett interfered with Larkin, and 6'5 defenseman Kevin Stenlund tripped Larkin. But really, in a 4-0 game, Ted, with scrums and skirmishes, Wallman took 16 minutes and penalties. I would have to ask, what is your captain doing in the third period of a 4-0 game with Montour, who had a goal and a 2 assists, arguably the best player on the ice? And after the game, you talk to Andrew Kopp, who really, he's almost like another coach on the team, high hockey IQ. He said, I think we lost our heads a little bit during some of those scrums. He says, you have to be prepared when teams want to play outside the whistles. Larkin could have been hurt in any game, Ted, but 15 games without him, two for personal reasons. Florida's Alexander Barkov missed 9 games. But if Larkin isn't hurt in those 5 games, with the way they were playing, they were 11 games over 500. Do you think that was the moment when the Wings just couldn't recover those 7 games, Ted?
I think they kind of expected to play better. I mean, you can kind of hope or wish, or it's a good lineup that you would think with, yes, all the pros that they have, you could overcome one. You know, Dylan Larkin's a heck of a player, obviously, but you like to think they could overcome something like that. So, yeah, that was a pretty disappointing part of the season for sure. I give credit to Washington, though. I mean, I know specifically Washington had to win some important games down the stretch against some very good teams, and they did. So tip your cap off to them. Didn't they beat Tampa, I think? And there was a Boston game in there that they won. With that type of roster that they had, I give Washington a lot of credit for just simply for getting into the playoffs. There were games they had to win, and they did it. So tip my cap off to them. Wings, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they had their chances. Obviously, there was a lot of games they'll look back on and figure they kind of kicked themselves in the, you know, they kind of stubbed their toes a lot of times along the way. But Yeah, that was a disappointing stretch for sure. I'm sure they expected to gain at least some points out of that skid.
And Ted, finally, the NHL playoffs, your predictions in the first round are at DetroitNews.com. In the East, you've got three home teams winning, Rangers in five, Hurricanes in six, Bruins in seven, only the visiting Lightning to upset the Panthers in six.
Just a gut feeling. I don't know. But watching game one, boy, it's going to be tough for Tampa. That Florida team is playing well. They really is. For in the West, that'll be interesting. I didn't get a chance to watch Winnipeg and Colorado, but I saw a lot of stories. Boy, oh boy. Not much goaltending in that game one, evidently.
In the West, you've got the Stars and the Jets in seven, the Oilers in six. Your road team in the West is Nashville to upset the Canucks.
I still like that. I still think Nashville could come back and win that series. Boy, Vegas, kind of fortuitous for the Knights to get Mark Stone back in the lineup. I tell you, that's a powerful lineup. It really is. And boy, how about the Dallas Stars facing them in the first round? Jeez, oh, Pete. But I still think Dallas can hold its own. Edmonton, boy, oh, boy. When Edmonton plays like that, and maybe with the path they have going forward, I think Edmonton's got a pretty good chance in this tournament. I really do.
Ted, thanks again for your time today and for all season, really. You can find all of Ted's stories online at DetroitNews.com as well as on our Octopulse Facebook page. That'll do it for episode 102 of our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. Much appreciated, everyone, for listening. Just a reminder, you can subscribe anytime. There's a new subscriber option in the show notes. We'll talk again before the Memorial Cup, which is in Saginaw this year. They'll begin hosting the tournament on May the 24th.